This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 154. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Action's milestone, JLI gets a new lease on life, the brightest cul-de-sac, quoting Overstreet and Angel bids adieu to IDW, plus America's fastest growing new game show. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, May 1st, 2011. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. You can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
This is the end of our big contest. Today we give away our big prize.
The grand prize.
The grand prize. And we will announce the winner at the end of our podcast. So I'm not going to review the rules for entering because nobody needs to enter anymore.
That's right.
So we'll just have a word from Pack Rat Comics.
As Announcer Bot says every week, I've been collecting comics for over 20 years, so I've been through quite a number of comic book dealers, and no one matches the quality and value of Pack Rat Comics in Hilliard, Ohio. Jamie and Teresa have your favorite comics in stock, along with action figures, statues, toys, and all kinds of comic collectibles, along with a huge lower level filled with long boxes of older titles at great prices. If you want a regular pull account, you can't beat Pack Rat's discounts. The more you buy, the greater your savings. Pack Rat is well-organized, clean, and welcoming to new customers. They also hold regular events and community outreach, including a mini-convention for the upcoming Free Comic Book Day. So check them out on the web at packratcomics.com or call 614-527-8450. Or just drop by. They're at 3864 Latimer Street in Hilliard, Ohio, open 7 days a week. I trust Pack Rat for my weekly comic book order, and so should you. Back to you, Mindy.
And as I said earlier, we'll announce the winner of our grand prize at the end of the show today.
Action Comics number 900 by Cornell and Woods, plus Paul Dini, Richard Donner, Gary Frank, David S. Goyer, Jeff Johns, Damon Lindelof, Ryan Sook, and Brian Stelfreeze.
Is that Damon Lindelof of Lost?
In fact, it is.
Okay.
So DC's flagship title reaches this major milestone. There are actually other titles that have made it past 900. I think some Gold Key stuff at one point, because they were putting those out like in handfuls every week over a course of years. And so I think they passed 1,000. But in terms of a mainstream monthly title, this is the first one to actually, I believe, reach the elusive 900.
Well, that's what they said in the letters page or whatever.
Right.
That it was the first one.
And so this was a 96-page spectacular. They should have really called it a super spectacular to reference the old 100-page super spectaculars in the 70s, but oh well.
Maybe they would have had to add 4 pages to
right.
do this.
So this was a wrap-up of the Luthor storyline, multiple stories here. He becomes a god, and then he chooses defeating Superman over creating universal happiness. And then we also move along the Doomsday story. Yeah, I'm really not excited about that.
No, but there were some interesting scenes in there when they had the happiness scenes. Like, I liked it with Death and the body of the skier lying there, and they're both experiencing ultimate happiness.
Right.
You know, dead skier,
yeah.
Limbs askew.
Right.
And, of course, we get a visit from Lar Flees, who's experiencing ultimate happiness. He says, it's mine, all mine. I like that. I had a question, though. When Lex went back to normal, he would have forgotten that Clark was Superman, right?
Right. Right.
So we don't have to worry about that in the future.
Yeah, he conveniently forgot that. We also get this few-page Jor-El story about him preparing to send Kal-El, and he has to be able to send, like, food and water. And he's working with this other scientist to come up with how they're going to ship all that.
Yeah, but, you know, I just thought, Jor-El built the rocket, you know? He didn't consult other people.
Right.
Nobody else knew about it or believed
exactly.
him.
Yeah, that was a little strange. We get this very weird Paul Dini alien story about some sort of floating elephant-like alien being, and he's just kind of hanging out with Superman.
Yeah.
A little trippy.
It was a little trippy. I thought that maybe they had that in there to show that, because the last line at the end where they say, we're only human, even though they're not, they're showing that aliens have humanity too.
Right. There's a few-page Johns and Frank story where Lois invites the Legion of Superheroes over for like a party at the apartment.
This confused me, okay? She invited them over,
yeah.
Right? Because when Superman lived in Smallville and he was Superboy or whatever, he would go and hang out in the future with the Legion. So is the Legion that came back to have this dinner party with them the Legion that he hung out with, who would all be like teenagers? Or is it where they're grown up and they're the same age he is? And if they're not, what does 28-year-old reporter Superman have in common with these teen heroes anymore?
I believe they're slightly older versions by that point. It's not very clear, but I have to assume they're a little older than that. Maybe they're not as old, but they're a little older than being teens.
I just thought that would be a weird thing to do.
Yeah. We then have a Richard Donner story that is in storyboard form, but we can't avoid anymore the elephant in the room. The story about Superman renouncing his U.S. citizenship.
That, I believe, is only in there so that people will talk about Superman 900.
Yes, and buy the comic. Now, David S. Goyer wrote that particular story, and he is also writing the next Superman movie. And so a lot of people are taking this to the ridiculous extreme of, oh, this is just a taste of what the Superman movie is going to be like. It's like, don't think so. And I have a special message if the media can just really get close and just really listen in. Superman is a fictional character. So you really don't have to make this major story of, oh, this is terrible, and he's turning his back on America, and oh.
Yeah, one of my friends said something along the fact that it was horrible, horrible, horrible. She's never read a Superman comic.
Of course not.
But oh my gosh, Superman is renouncing his citizenship.
And neither did 99% of the people who made comments on the boards and the media who made such a fuss about it. They didn't read it either.
Now, there's a really interesting blog that I like called Law and the Multiverse.
Yeah.
And they did a brief little thing on whether you could renounce your citizenship and what would happen. They look at laws and how they would pertain to comic book characters where they really apply.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought up an interesting question in that, can Superman even renounce a citizenship? Who is the citizen? Is Superman a citizen? Is Clark Kent a citizen? Is he renouncing it for both? And what's the deal? So, you know, you have to look at that, too.
Right. Well, there's two ways of looking at it. Either how could he get a citizenship? Because you'd have to have real information about him, which he wouldn't give. Now, on the other side, I saw this reference in bleedingcool.com, and I remember this particular story from the 70s where he got honorary citizenship in all UN countries. This is back in the Silver Age. And the reason they did this was because the crushing weight of continuity, that everything had to fit and make sense. And so people are saying, well, how can Superman go between countries? What about having to show his passport and things
yeah.
like that? And they sidestepped that whole issue by going, oh, the UN gave him honorary citizenship. So he's technically a citizen of every country on Earth.
So technically he wouldn't have to renounce his U.S. citizenship in order to help other countries.
Right. Now, this whole thing reminded me of a story that was in Life magazine back in the 40s, how Superman would win the war. And it was Siegel and Shuster wrote this two-page story. And essentially, Superman flies over to Europe, snags Hitler and snags Stalin and Mussolini and takes him in front of the world court. And that's basically the story. The thing is, that didn't actually happen. See, there was actually a World War II. And again, going back to the whole, he's a fictional character.
I just think that to create this much media furor over something like that is ridiculous.
It must have been a slow news day, apparently. Justice League Generation Lost, number 24, the final issue by Winnick and Lepestri.
Fangirl squee here, you know.
So we have two big battles going on, the JLI and Wonder Woman versus OMAC Prime. This robot thing that Max Lord has created also has the properties of a Mazo, who is an old JLA villain who can absorb powers and duplicate JLI powers. The problem is it can't handle Blue Beetle's alien armor, and it just goes out of control, and then Blue Beetle takes him out.
For Ted Kord!
Yeah. And then there's a Booster versus Max battle where there's a boatload of exposition going on during the fight. You'd think these guys would get winded a little bit and they wouldn't be able to give these big speeches as they're beating up on each other.
I think we should point out that this was completely without superpowers.
Right.
This fight was.
Yes.
Booster's superpower suit was turned off by Max for the fight.
Right. And then they're just duking it out. And in the end, Captain Atom finishes off Max by saying, I've absorbed all this energy and I'm going into the future. I don't know where I'm going. I'm holding on to you and you're going with me unless you get the world to remember again about you. And in the end, Max forces everybody with his mind to remember him. And then Captain Atom disappears. And again, he's back in the future at some point. In the end, Max sets up this big cover story where he's just the little guy here and all this, and he's not a villain, and everybody's just believing it, of course, because, again, he's using his powers to make everybody believe it.
There's nothing to prove that he did do any of
it. Yeah, there's nothing.
So, you know, he, through this whole thing, he's been setting it up so that I think he could fall back on this story if he needed to.
Right. And in the end of the story, Bruce tells Booster he's getting the band back together. There will be a new JLI ongoing series. Yay!
That makes me very happy.
Oh, we're very happy about that. That's really what I was hoping was going to come out of this. So, a really great series. Looking forward to the new ongoing. Brightest Day number 24 by Johnson Tomasi plus a mess of other artists. This is the finale of Brightest Day.
And I was really less enthused about this one than I was the Generation Lost.
Absolutely. So several things happen in here. It's the return of Alex Holland and John Constantine to the DCU, who moved over to Vertigo, and now they're bringing them back. There's a battle between good Swamp Thing and bad Swamp Thing. Dead Man is dead again. Firestorm, Aquaman, Hawkman, and Martian Manhunter return. Carter loses Shara again. Who cares? Because they reincarnate, and so she'll be back in a couple months.
Well, except that, didn't they say that this was the last time they were going to reincarnate?
Until they reincarnate again.
But he doesn't know that at this point. You know,
this
he thinks it's not going to happen again.
Right, but to the reader, it's like,
Yeah.
And Firestorm is now on some sort of countdown to explosion. All in all, this is essentially a big cul-de-sac storyline that has no impact on the DCU. At the beginning, there were several titles that were trying to tie into it, and then they just kind of pulled back. So the only thing that really, in the end, was tying to it was the Green Arrow title, which I'm also not all that excited about. It also feels like they really had to rush this ending, because this last issue was just lots of exposition and lots. Okay, this is how it's like a checkoff. Finish that storyline.
Well, and they didn't finish a lot of storylines. They just set them up to be continued in other books.
True. But there was like a couple pages where it's clearly just a checklist of, okay, we got back to that one. Now let's move on to the next thing, another panel. I think what happened here was they got rushed because they had to get it out of the way before Flashpoint started.
Well, but they knew that it was going
to
be ending at that point.
They did.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So is Constantine's Hellblazer coming over back too?
Apparently every Vertigo character that started at DC and Hellblazer did is going to come back to DC. So that's why the whole thing with Swamp Thing coming back.
I wonder if that may be a sign that they're going to try to sell off Vertigo.
I don't think so. I think it's more a status of we want to make Vertigo Vertigo. End the whole, well, is this person a DC character or a Vertigo character? I think they're trying to really set a very clear demarcation now, which isn't the worst thing to do. JSA 50 by Guggenheim, Denerick, Chaikin, Perez, Williams, and Koblish. More multiple stories in an anniversary issue.
But were those multiple stories supposed to tie together? Because really it said they were episodes.
They kind of tied together, but it really was because it was different writers and different artists. There was a thread that went through them. But so we get to see how the modern heroes were inspired by the JLA.
By the JSA.
And in the end, they add a quote from Overstreet. And Overstreet is, of course, the person who created the comics book guide, the Overstreet Guide. There's a story that's a setup for a future Per Degaton story, and Per Degaton is an old JSA World War II villain, although we've seen him through various eras, but that's where he started. There's a flashback to the JSA Senate hearings, and that's how they explained why the JSA disappeared. In reality, it disappeared because their comics were canceled, but in reality, in the comic book storyline, the Senate brings them in and says, look, you've got to tell us who you really are. Or, you know, are you, you know, fifth columnist?
You're commies.
Are you commies? And we can't tell unless we know who you really are. And instead they say, okay, then we're quitting and walking away and you won't know who we are because we're all masked or, you know, otherwise disguised. And then the last story, Jay officially becomes mayor of Monument Point.
And there's a big battle with this Per Degaton, and it looked to me like Wildcat might have been aged drastically and perhaps killed.
Oh, this could be another one of his nine lives that they'll just reset him on.
Yeah.
That's my guess. Angel number 44, the final issue of this series. A lot of final issues. So Angels and the whole set of characters now moving over to Dark Horse. And so this was just cleaning up all the final plot lines.
I thought they did a fairly good job of cleaning up the plot lines. What did you think?
I thought so. I mean, it didn't seem necessarily rushed. I mean, they knew it was coming. And so they brought everything to a conclusion.
Right. Now, there is a yearbook special coming out, I think, this month.
Right. And it is new stories, from what I can tell.
Yes.
It's not just...
A lot of the writers who have worked on the series at IDW got to pick out their characters that they wanted to work with to sort of write a farewell story for them.
Exactly.
Now, I was curious as to what they were going to do with Angel at Dark Horse now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had Angel come up in this season 8 Buffy comic.
Right.
So how does that correspond with the Angel from IDW and what's going to be going forward with Angel?
I have to assume there's going to be an Angel title there.
Well, I can tell you.
Okay.
I looked.
Okay.
What they're saying at Dark Horse is that all the events that happened at IDW in the Angel series happened before the events in the Buffy season 8 comic.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So we don't know what happened between the end of this comic that we just read and the beginning of the season 8 Buffy comic. We don't know what was happening to Angel.
So that gives them a lot of leeway as to what they can do.
Right. Now, what they're going to do for the actual Angel comic coming up, it's going to be Angel and Faith in a comic together.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to start right at the end of season 8 Buffy and be concurrent with the next season of Buffy comics.
Season 9, yeah.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. I really am interested in seeing that. I'm also interested, I wonder, and I didn't see anything about this, all the characters that IDW created to go in the Angel universe, do those stay at IDW, or do they move with the characters?
It probably is something they have to negotiate as to what they'd allow, whether Dark Horse can buy the rights to those new characters or not, because otherwise... For the most part, I don't know what IDW would do with them.
Besides, just keep them out of spite.
Right. Other than just hold on to them and not use them. And
well, the way that rights move around, it's possible that sometime in the future, IDW could again have the rights
True.
To Angel Comics.
True. All right. Before we get out of here, I think it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay. Go.
Is it movie related?
Yes.
Is it one movie?
Yes.
Is it a movie coming out?
Yes.
Okay, not out yet. Is
Correct.
It one person on the cover?
No.
Is two people on the
yes.
cover?
Yes.
Man and a woman?
Yes.
They're the leads of the movie?
Yes.
Is it a comedy?
No.
Is it a drama?
Sort of.
Is it a genre related
yes.
movie? Is it superhero related?
No.
Is it horror related?
You could make a case for it, but...
It's not like some sort of Twilight-y type thing, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Is it actually Twilight?
It is.
Okay. And it's either sparkly vampire guy or shirtless werewolf guy.
And who is sparkly vampire guy? Come on, we've done this like 8 times already.
Robert Pattinson?
Yes,
like
that's
that?
Correct.
Okay.
And I don't remember who.
Yeah.
Who the girl is, but you got that. I'll give it to you. And it's they're talking about Breaking Dawn Part 1 that's due in November.
Yes.
I tell you, I don't like this trend now towards breaking down books into two-part movies.
Right. Yeah.
I've had enough Twilight. Get rid of it.
Yeah, I had enough Twilight at the beginning. Vampires can't go out in the sunlight. This whole, they don't sparkle. They implode. Okay?
Mark, there's no such thing as vampires.
Well, I guess you got me there.
Yeah. And
All
if
right.
there were, you could make them do whatever you wanted.
Yeah. It's time to announce the grand prize winner of the Blackest Night Power Ring Spectrum set, and it's...
Ryan Regland.
Woohoo!
So, Ryan, you need to email me with the address that you'd like the Blackest Night Power Ring Spectrum set sent to. And Mark is really jealous because he wants
yep.
this too.
Yep. Kind of hoping he doesn't actually answer.
Then we have to give it to someone else, Mark.
I suppose. So, want to remind you also about Free Comic Book Day. It's next Saturday, May 7th. We will be recording the show at Pat Grack Comics in Hilliard, Ohio. Please come in. Come on, say hi. And you'll also get an opportunity to pick up a free comic. So, very excited about that next week. We want you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9-SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.